from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Happy New Year! Today I'll find out about what the Super Arts and Culture Committee has planned for the Super Bowl.
I'll chat with the members of IDOTA about their super pavilion of art installations they've created for the big game.
And then I'll get some super pointers for writers who want to keep their New Year's resolutions to finish that novel. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Sure, there will be a big ball game in Indy in just a few weeks, but Super Bowl 46 is a chance to show off more than our sporting facilities. Visitors will have a chance to learn a lot about art and culture, not just of our city, but of our state as well, as Sharon Gamble learned when she spoke with Arts Council President Dave Lawrence and Indiana Humanities Council President Kira Amstutz. Together, they chair the Super Arts and Culture Committee.
Tell me your first thought when you learned that we won it, we were going to host the Super Bowl.
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a testament to a lot of hard work by a lot of people, and I and also the culmination of a lot of hard work in this city. Things like the Pan Am Games and the National Sports Festival and all of that stuff that has sort of taken our city to the next level. So, I have to say I was surprised, but boy, that was a great day, too. Just the excitement knowing what was in store for Indianapolis.
Kind of puts us in a different category, in a different league. We're playing with the big kids now.
It really generated such a sense of pride. And I do think, as Dave said, it was really built on so many events that have come before. But this is really different. This is a different scale. It has a different feel. It has a different energy level. But I think it goes back to what Indianapolis does well, and that is mobilize lots of people around an exciting event to really showcase the best of who we are.
Mm. Which leads directly into, as arts and culture leaders, your next thought had to be, how do I take advantage of this?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. We got to play our part.
That's right. Part of the team, always.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's no lack of creative minds in this community. So I'm sure there was an initial list of, 500, 2,000 ideas for things we could do. But I'm also just as convinced there was probably a lot of research. Take me behind the scenes to how your committee came together and what you left behind as far as some of the ideas.
Well, I think that when Kira and I began thinking about this, one of the first things we did was to look back at the good work that the Indianapolis Cultural Development Commission had done in all of the infusion activities around several other major sporting events in the mid-2000s. The World Police and Fire Games, the World Swimming Championships, all of those sort of things that we had a really strong track record of infusing the arts in sometimes unique and interesting ways that were also a bit surprising that folks didn't. That's really neat. I didn't know that this existed here. So I think that was a really good foundation on which we began mm-hmm. sort of thinking through what this could be in terms of arts and cultural infusion.
Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to attend a Super Bowl in Miami, and I observed this was many years ago as part of some pre-bid work that we had done. And I was astonished that at least in that very cultural community that the that you really didn't see the arts and cultural piece very strongly in that Super Bowl. It was not a prominent part. Well, I think it's such a strong cultural community. The cultural community stands on its own there, and that's great. But I don't know that there was this deliberate effort, the way we do things in Indianapolis, to say, wow, there's a great cultural event going on. There's a great sports event going on. Let's all wrap our arms around that and see how we can make it bigger and better and a better experience for the Central Indiana consumers and also for our outside visitors. So I think we we just take a different approach here, and I think that was really obvious to me as I observed at least one other Super Bowl city.
And you just said something key, too, which is some cities might frame this as, okay, let's show off our art, our arts and our culture during the week of Super Bowl. But we are smart about what can we add to the community that will still be here or that will be consumable and enjoyable by the people who are going to be here long after the Super Bowl is over.
I think you're exactly right. It's the whole notion of legacy. How can the planning and the events that we're doing leave a lasting legacy on the city and also on the people that are coming here to enjoy the city, to experience the game, or even just turning on TV and watching and maybe picking up some of this, you know, even through the airwaves of the TV? I think that that's just sort of what we were really hoping to do is you know, we keep hearing, you know, oh, it's a football game and it's just a big football game. Well, it's a lot more than that. And we want it to be a lot more than that. And if we're not seizing these opportunities to create some lasting legacies and maybe some new connections that weren't there before, I think we're doing it a disservice. So that's one of the things that we really wanted to do was create that.
It's also a football game in a place a lot of people will not have been to and will be visiting Indianapolis for the very first time. So it's an opportunity to, there's a wow opportunity there for them to go home and go, I had no idea. Who knew? And I have to say, I've been enjoying driving around the city, and it's like, oh, there's another one of those cool murals. Who knew? I'm like, wow. You know?
They just keep springing up everywhere,
they do.
Don't
it's
they?
So
Dave,
cool.
I don't know how you guys have pulled it off. That's a lot of murals in a short time.
I don't know how we did either.
The artists have been working hard.
They have been.
So the murals are obviously one of the most visible early components. Kira, tell me about the cards and the school kids.
Oh, well, that's another wonderful project. I think the other thing that Indianapolis does beautifully when we host any kind of event is try to draw in as many people as possible from all corners to participate in an effort. And one of the early challenges as we were thinking through the arts and cultural components is what are some really fun ways we could include young people? And Susie Townsend with the Super Services Committee said, gosh, it would be really nice to give visitors a personalized welcome note in every hotel room. Well, it sounded like a really groovy idea, but every hotel room means 18,000 hotel rooms.
You did the math, yeah.
We did the math, and we worked with Kristen Hess, who is a graphic designer who works at Indiana Humanities with me, designed this beautiful card where students can write a little bit about what they love about Indiana and then draw a picture of their favorite thing in Indiana. So we now have, as of today, 27,300
wow.
welcome cards that have come in from virtually all 92 counties. We're still trying to get all 92 involved. But it will be such a warm and wonderful way to welcome people, and it's involved a lot of school kids all across the state.
That is just so sweet and so smart, too.
Well, so personal. And again, that's what we want this to be, not only for local residents but for visitors. Very, very personal and very creative.
And I think it's just finding a lot of different ways to harness that excitement about this coming to Indianapolis. And we can do it through art, we can do it through welcomes, we can do it through, you know, a myriad of different ways. And the cards, I just can't believe we're at 27,000. It's amazing.
Well, I can't either. And I think the other point that you made earlier, Sharon, is sort of some of this was planned, but so much of what's happened with the arts and cultural components from the Super Bowl happened exactly as it should, from brilliant creative minds in Indianapolis taking this opportunity and creating something amazing. I mean, I guess the IDATA project comes to mind. The turf project at the old City Hall is going to be an extraordinary showcase of Indiana artists. And that certainly wasn't anything that anybody had on an early list of things we should do. This was created by, you know, the really smart folks who are part of IDATA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dave, maybe you could explain that
a little bit
more.
And our listeners are going to hear about that in depth next week, actually, yeah.
Well, it's one of those projects. Kira's exactly right. You know, when you talked earlier about the research phase of this, and it really was just collecting any sort of off-the-wall idea as far as we could go to see where these things would come about and what ones really resonated. And I think those that did are the programs that impact the most people, have the biggest wow, and can really harness that energy and creativity. And the TURF project is, the way I describe it is, it's going to be like 20 mini museum experiences all wrapped into one, multi-sensory art experiences, and it's all Indiana artists. And so it's not going to be sort of an art fair, you know, with just pretty paintings on the wall or whatever. These are going to be things that are just going to engulf you when you get into them. And I think it's going to create a lot of conversation and buzz, and we couldn't ask for more.
So cool. What are some of the other initiatives that you're most excited about?
Oh my gosh, there's so much. I do want to go back quickly to the murals project, because I think that that is not only going to be a great legacy piece, but a great surprise for so many folks who are visitors to the city. I think it's going to be, you know, they're going to be a great series of photo ops. I think that's going to be really fun. So I hope that as, you know, when, as the 46th one is completed between now and Super Bowl Sunday, I hope people, you know, start to go out and use that as a great way to sightsee and see Indianapolis and maybe see things in a little different way.
Sure.
So, well, you mentioned photography. One of the other projects that we're working on is called the Petal Project, which means Photographing East Side Transformation and Legacy. I can't believe I remember
good job.
That.
I can't ever get that out.
Because of the extraordinary transformation that's happening on the Near East Side with the Chase Youth Legacy Center and all of the great development that's happening out there, We began working with Rebecca Hutton and Dante Ventresca of a group called Theater of Inclusion, mm-hmm. two fabulously talented artists that are here in Indianapolis. I think the world of them. And they set about to work with Tech High School students to document this Near East Side transformation. And what we knew early on is if we wanted to again, thinking about legacy, have this be more than just a photography project. Rebecca and Dante were the people that we needed to have lead this initiative. So mm-hmm. they've taken these kids through a whole almost 6 month long workshop process and getting them to understand you know, their neighborhood and what it means to be photographers and talking about expression and legacy and all of that. And
they've
it
done
is
some
remarkable.
Writing too, in addition to shooting the photography.
Absolutely.
And
hmm.
it's just spectacular work.
So instead of just documenting, going out and taking some pictures of the Near East Side, these kids were sharing their lives as part of this program. And there's going to be a wonderful photo series that will document this entire just experience. And I think it's wonderful.
You know, one other project that I think will also be a wonderful surprise and generate a lot of excitement in the community is the National Art Museum of Sport will have some very visible pieces throughout downtown. And that has been something that has sort of been part of the planning for a long time. I mean, what a wonderful resource that we have in our community and a wonderful national resource. So you'll be seeing sport art about as part of the Super Bowl effort.
And, you know, we've talked a lot about how the visual arts are going to be part of the Super Bowl, but there's a lot that we're doing for performing artists as well. There is a indie music project that will be a downloadable content of 46 bands, musicians, acts, both current and from long ago, that sort of highlight indie's music history, so that when folks leave Indianapolis, they can take with them a sample of, you know,
John Cougar Mellencamp when he was called that, down to
Johnny Cougar even.
Johnny Cougar.
That's right.
Down to the latest artist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that another thing that we've been really involved in is plugging in as many Indiana artists and bands and acts to the performing stages. And very soon there will be a big announcement about all of the performers that will be on the stages in the village. And we've made sure that there's a lot of Indiana bands and musicians and singers that are included in that.
Yeah, that was a really great cross-collaboration between all the folks that are managing the entertainment committee and one of our other co-chairs, Ryan Hickey, who's with Orange, who has spent a lot of time helping curate those bands and think through that, as has our other co-chair, Alpha Blackburn. So it's really been a fun way to draw in the performing artists and a great way to showcase Indiana. And I hope everyone will download the Music Legacy Project so that they can check out all of the current and past Indiana greats.
Sharon Gamble with the Arts Council of Indianapolis' Dave Lawrence and the Indiana Humanities Council's Kira Amstutz. Find out more about Super Arts and Culture by visiting IndianapolisSuperBowl.com. That's IndianapolisSuperBowl.com and clicking Super Arts and Culture on the lower left under Host Committee Programs.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indianapolis Downtown Artists and Dealers Association, or IDADA, has created the Turf Art Pavilion inside the historic City Hall building on North Alabama for locals and visitors to enjoy before the Super Bowl. Travis DiNicola spoke with IDADA members and artists Mark Rushman, Nancy Lee, Leslie Baker, and Nick Altman about this temporary exhibit.
Leslie, Nancy, Mark, Nick, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you all in our studio today.
Good to be here.
Hi, Travis.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm going to start with Mark and Nancy, as the two of you are leading IDADA and leading this turf idea. How did this come about? I mean, the idea of finally doing something with the space that has been the State Museum, that was the courthouse, that was the library, and now it's going to be an art pavilion at least for
3 weeks
or so. How did this all come about?
Well, once we found out that we were going to host the Super Bowl, a small group of us got together from IDADA, and we started trying to figure out what we could do to showcase the local visual arts community. And the idea of looking for a venue actually close to Lucas Oil Stadium, kind of in the mix of things, that was underway. And as you can imagine, a lot of the spaces were spoken for or people were already looking at them. And Jason Sickler made the suggestion of looking at the old State Museum building. And while I thought that it was going to be impossible for a variety of reasons, once we actually gained access to the space and saw it, we knew we had to have it. So we put the request in through the mayor's office, who has been great to work with on this. And again, the idea was to create an event that would bring all eyes to the cultural diversity that we have here, and the talent that resides here in the city. And this seemed to be the perfect venue to do that.
Now, is it the mayor's office that oversees that building, or how does that all sort of work out? I mean, because nothing's really been in there since it was the interim library, and it hasn't been that for over 5 years now.
Well, the building is owned by the city.
Okay.
Even though it was a state museum.
Okay.
Before it was the city-county building.
Okay.
It was built in 1902, and it was a city, the original city-county building, which housed the mayor's offices and the courts and everything else until about 1960. And then, of course, the State Museum moved in there. So it is the property of the city. And, again, we were working closely with them, and they've been great to work with. And very supportive.
Now, it is a absolutely stunning building, I mean, inside and out. And I used to always love going into it when it was the State Museum and then as an interim library. But, you know, 5 years of not being used, that takes a toll on a building. I remember at one talk years ago, there was suggestions that it could be a museum, but there'd have to be so many renovations for at least long term because of dealing with the heat and the cold and the humidity. Obviously, you're only going to be in there 3 weeks, so those issues aren't quite as important. But, I mean, did you have a lot to tackle to sort of get this building ready for a show?
Well, a building that's been sitting vacant for a while, yes, you're going to have things that need to be cleaned. And, and just by the nature of the project that we're doing, we have to do a certain amount of construction and just preparation for bringing the artist in and then opening up to the public. But you mentioned it. The building itself is a work of art. So we feel not only will people be coming in to see the installation works by the artist, but also they'll be there seeing a work of art in the building itself. So there's going to be multiple reasons to come in. While we're doing this project, it's been interesting because as vendors come in, construction crews come in, and so forth and so on, everybody has a story to tell about the old State Museum.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a familiar building, but a lot of people haven't seen it for a while. So it's been a real pleasure working in the building.
Nancy, tell me a little bit about your involvement on this project so far. How did you get to be a part of it, and what's it like trying to turn the old State Museum into an art exhibition space?
Well, I've been a member of IDADA for a while, and I began serving as secretary of IDADA in January of 2011, and discussions were already underway with securing a location and so on and so forth. And since I have a background in construction, and that kind of led me to kind of a unique situation being an artist and having a background in construction, it led me to help out with the construction end of things on this project.
So can you guys give us a little sense of, I mean, we're going to talk to the artists that are with us in a moment about the work that they're doing, but when we walk into the building, the turf exhibit, the turf show, the turf space, whatever you're calling it, I mean, will we immediately think, oh, it's art in the State Museum, or are you building new spaces, or?
Yes, we're building new spaces in the wings, mm-hmm. On the first floor and the second
floor. The turf pavilion, I guess, that's the official. Okay, I'll get this right.
The turf pavilion. Mm-hmm. When you walk in, you're still going to get that oh wow effect of walking into that mm-hmm. beautiful grand rotunda. And then in the wings off to the sides, that's where you'll begin to experience the art installations. Okay. And what we've done with those great big spaces is divide those using drywall and really simple construction techniques to subdivide those spaces into smaller art experience spaces that the artists will then take over and make their own.
Oh, very
cool.
So
there'll be right around 20 feet by 20 feet, a pretty good amount of space to have about 20 separate art experiences as you go through the building.
Neat. This is just going to, it sounds like a ton of fun. And I know that you're planning for a big opening night that's coming up very soon, as well as, of course, events going on throughout the Super Bowl. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. January the
13th.
Friday the 13th will be our gala opening. Tickets are for sale. They are available
at the website, which is idataartpavilion.com.
Okay.
You can go on there and purchase your tickets. And the event is that Friday night from 6 until 11 p.m.
Okay.
It will also be a catered event by the Skyline Club, who we've partnered with on this event. And the Skyline Club will actually have a food venue in the Turf Pavilion for the full length of the three-week show.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Very good. And then for access to the pavilion after the opening night, is it free? Is there a charge? How does that work when people are going to be in town here for the Super Bowl or in the days leading up to it?
The turf pavilion is open and free to the public the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
The only time we're charging any admission fee at all is for the ticketed gala reception the night of the 13th.
Okay, very good. Let's. I want to talk about some of the art that's going to be in here. Leslie, let's start with you. Leslie Baker, so what is it that you have been working on for the turf pavilion?
I am working on a piece titled Bull in the China Shop, and it's an oversized, large wooden bull
mm-hmm.
that's made primarily out of pallets, wood. I'm taking apart pallets and putting them back together with some
like
ceramic.
Big, like, sort of like shipping pallets
yes,
type things?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so he's rough.
Okay.
And he's overscale, so he's about 8 feet tall, 14 feet long, with some ceramic elements, because I am primarily a ceramic artist. So he's got a couple of ceramic components to him that I hope will stand out from the wood as being more precious.
Now, was this something you'd been thinking about before and then saw this as a great opportunity, or did you come up with it just for the
I've
Super Bowl?
I've had the idea for the bull in a different form.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the idea of that, you know, again, this beautiful old building sort of pushed it in a different direction, the materials. In a different direction, because I like the idea of this beautiful old finished space with kind of a rough element
mm-hmm.
and something that's obviously very out of place. And, and he's on the second floor, so he pushes him even out of place even more.
Oh, very good. So now most of the work would be installation type work that's going to be shown, or will there be? I mean, some cases where it's more you know, series of paintings, or what do you anticipate, Mark?
No, actually, it's all installation-based work.
Mm-hmm.
The idea behind the pavilion was not to recreate a typical art fair setting where people will come in and see individual works up on the wall for sale. We felt that it was important not to compete with the galleries that already exist in Mass Avenue, Fountain Square, the Harrison Center, the Stutz Building, and all the other venues that participate in the First Friday event. It's important to note that the Super Bowl weekend will coincide with a First Friday art tour,
mm-hmm.
the IDOTA First Friday art tour. So as people come to the pavilion, we'll give them information about the First Friday art tour, and we'll drive them out to the artist studios, art galleries, and the various other venues in town for them to spend their money and buy local artists' work.
Okay, very good. So, Nick, you had to be excited when you heard that Nancy talking about putting in drywall, just because, I mean, the work that I'm familiar with of yours tends to be these incredible pieces that are often sort of practical, whether they're almost like furniture pieces, but they're kind of in many ways being like ripped out of the wall. I mean, a lot of stuff, people know your work that's been in Christopher West's gallery and work that I've really enjoyed, but you kind of need a wall you can rip out to do that.
Yes.
And this, you know, those marble walls and floors of the State Museum are the, you
well,
know.
Well, I asked Mark about that, and I just couldn't convince him.
I'm sure it was tempting, though.
Yes. Very.
Get a jackhammer.
actually, my piece references some of what you were asking Mark about earlier, mm-hmm. the age of the building, and so maybe alludes to some of the perceived decay. I am creating a space that's off in one of the wings that's more enclosed than some of the rest of the spaces, so you can kind of have a unique experience within it. And I'm creating a situation where the second story has fallen through, probably through years of, you know, not being kept up or
sure.
poor maintenance, and has allowed a heavy icebox from the early, you know, probably 1920s to embed itself into the gallery floor.
And this is what you found when you kind of went in there?
It's all found.
Wow.
A lot of found object, but it didn't actually come from the space, I would mm-hmm. I have to admit.
No,
but
city property was used.
Yes, yeah. Or harm.
Yeah. It's important.
So it has embedded itself into the gallery floor at a convenient height to be used as a coffee table.
Okay.
And the door will actually open, and you can use it as a storage solution as well.
It sounds like both of you, Leslie and Nick, are having a lot of fun with this, really sort of being able to take advantage of what the Turf Pavilion's offering you.
Yes. Yeah. The easy answer, yes. I mean, it was a unique proposal. You know, mm-hmm. it was nice to be offered, or, you know, when the submission went out, like, here's this space. We're seeking this. I do think I'm very happy that it is something different being offered, and that it's all this installation work. I'm really excited to see it and experience it, and I still don't know everything that's happening in there.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to explore.
It must just be like a flurry of activity going on there right now with all the different artists working on the installation and such. How very cool. Well, I'm really pleased that it's also what you're doing with it is that you are opening it obviously well before the Super Bowl, so that a lot of people, you know, locally who may not want to venture downtown on that first Friday can at least get down and check out the Turf Pavilion well before then.
We also have the opportunity for local and out-of-town people to have events, private events, after the closing hours each day.
Very good. I know that space is at a premium for events like that. So, well, I want to wish you all the best with this. It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get down there to see it, and I wish you the best with your opening as well. So thank you all for being on Art of the Matter.
Thank you, Travis.
Thanks, Travis.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with IDOTA members and artists Mark Rushman, Nancy Lee, Leslie Baker, and Nick Altman. The Turf IDOTA Art Pavilion has a grand opening on January 13th with a party, and then it opens to the public on January 14th. It's located at 202 North Alabama, the location most recently of the Interim Central Library, and before that, the Indiana State Museum. You can get more information, including tickets for the grand opening, at idadaartpavilion.com. That's idadaartpavilion.com.
Sharon.
Travis.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and to all of our listeners and all the arts organizations that are ready for 2012.
That's right. That's yeah. right. And if your resolution is to do more things, have we got some deals for you on that calendar we call
What'll We Do? That's right. First weekend of 2012 or, well, throughout the whole rest of the year.
But there you go.
Yeah, some fun new things to do. If you've never seen a play at the Phoenix Theater, well, now's the time, because they have a new play, a world premiere called Current Economic Conditions, that is opening up next weekend, January 12th. It'll run through February 12th. And it is a brand new play that they are world premiering here, and we'll have much more about that in the coming weeks. But how fun to go see a new play in Indianapolis.
New is fun. Travis?
Yeah, sure. Oh, my gosh. It is like the biggest weekend in the world at the State Fairgrounds.
No,
I know where you're going
I'll
with
let
this,
you
Sharon.
Talk about this one, because you're the expert on this.
Well, there's a train show this weekend, like one of the biggest
that
in the country.
That attracted 30,000 people the last time.
Oh, my gosh. I know. And there's also a fly fishing show this weekend, too. It's like heaven at the State Fairgrounds.
Wait, I just had a picture of you fly fishing from a caboose. You know, I don't think it works that way.
You can do both. You can spend half the day at one pavilion and half
this
at the other.
This is a big deal. The train show features more than 200 booths, hands-on displays where visitors can operate model trains, a train playground, a small train for children to ride called Thomas the Tank Engine, and the show travels to only about half a dozen cities each year, so it's a really big deal
that it is here.
Yeah.
Well, and especially, you know, maybe like you got a train set for Christmas or working on one or wanted to add to it, it's a great place to you know, get extra track and buildings and engines and cabooses and everything in every scale imaginable. Or just, you know what? What's really cool is just go and checking out all the displays of the beautiful train sets that people have set up.
That's right. And virtually every manufacturer and every gauge will be represented. And if you're looking to find out more about this, I'm not sure we actually said this clearly enough. It's at the State Fairgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And it is called, it's called something not quite intuitive. It's called the World's Greatest Hobby on Tour Model Train Show.
And don't forget that there's also the fly fishing
show. And the fly fishing show.
State Fair this weekend,
okay,
too.
There you go.
Very fun. Hey, the Rhythm Discovery Center and the Indianapolis Jazz Foundation are partnering to present a joint program on January 14th at 1 p.m., and that is in recognition of Martin Luther King Day, and it is a Saturday program, and as part of that day, they're also offering free admission to the center, which is located downtown, just sort of right below the Arts Garden on that Saturday as well. But the program titled The Rhythm of Indiana Avenue is going to include a presentation by great drummer Larry Clark III, and he's going to be talking about Indiana Avenue and all the great history of all the great musicians and Wes Montgomery and J.J. Johnson, Slide Hampton and Freddie Hubbard and all that.
Wow.
And it's all part of a performance at the Rhythm Discovery Center. Again, 1 p.m., 110 West Washington Street, sort of just below the Arts Garden. And that's coming up on January 14th.
Excellent. Hey, a guy is coming courtesy of the Cabaret at the Columbia Club who's been in shows as diverse as Grease, the producers Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. He was a Star Search Grand Champion. His name is Sam Harris, and he's doing a show called Broadway Ballads and Blues. And just gotten all sorts of great reviews, quotes like, the sheer force of his charisma is mesmerizing, rousing one moment and heartbreaking the next. So if you'd like to see Sam Harris in a nice intimate setting at the Columbia Club, he's going to be here January 13th and 14th at 8 o'clock. And, of course, you can have a nice nosh at the Columbia Club while you are hearing the performance. That's nosh, nosh, nosh.
Hey, something else with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is actually on the 16th. The Indiana Rhythm Discovery Center event is on the 14th. On the 16th at the White River State Park, they are celebrating by providing free admission to all park attractions in exchange for canned food that day. So you can check out the Idol Jorg, the IMAX, the State Museum, the Zoo, the Hall of Champions, all of that. This year, plus there'll be a blood drive at the IMAX Theater, and there'll be popcorn if you donate blood, and there'll be health screenings at Victory Field, courtesy of Wishard. All types of great stuff going on all day long, January 16th, 2012. Bring lots of cans, and you can donate them and get free admission and free parking.
That is fantastic, and save a little bit of energy, because later that day, on Monday the 16th at 7 o'clock, at the Madam Walker Theater Center, there's a Celebration Gospel Festival tribute to Dr. King. This is part of the Gospel Partnership that the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir does annually. The concert's at 7 at the Madam Walker Theater Center, again on MLK Day, Monday, January 16th, and you can get more information at indychoir.org. And the Madam Walker Theater Center is at 617 Indiana Avenue.
Sharon, I've got an offer you can't refuse.
Uh-oh, what is it? What is it?
Going to see The Godfather at the Indianapolis Museum of Art as part of their 2012 Winter Nights.
Oh.
And they have dedicated this winter series to Technicolor films. And so they're all films in Technicolor. And starting this weekend with The Black Pirate and The Mystery of the Wax Museum. And then every weekend now through the end of February, Lever to Heaven, A Matter of Life and Death, African Queen. And then on February 3rd, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Then The Quiet Man, Charade, and finally wrapping up on the 24th with The Godfather Part 2 at the IMA.
That is an amazing series.
That's very fun.
What a nice assortment.
At the Toby. Check it out.
Yay. Travis, have you ever had the experience of hearing a Florence Foster Jenkins recording?
That sounds easy for not you to say. No, I'm not sure.
I should have sung a Florence
Oh my gosh, Sharon.
closed, right? She sang off key badly,
really?
Badly,
that sounds
badly.
Like...
But she had this brilliant career because she was so confident.
Sounds like my singing.
There are not one but two contemporary plays about this woman who had money and therefore was able to stage concerts. And she had a longtime accompanist who was a very kind man. Mm-hmm. And you can see one of the two plays called Souvenir. It's on stage now at the Buck Creek Playhouse at 11150 Southeastern Avenue. Kathy Tolsman plays the so-called self-styled opera soprano, Florence Foster Jenkins, and Kevin Smith plays her accompanist, Cosme McMoon. And Cosme is as much of a lovely character as Florence herself. People went just to see the train wreck that was
for
performances. So it takes, as you can imagine, very talented actors to pull this off. I mean, you have to actually know how to sing so you can sing badly. So that's going on. Again, Souvenir going on.
That sounds like a hoot.
I know, at Buck Creek Players through January 15th. So you need to take that in this week or next.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm. Hey, not too early to start planning for Valentine's Day, guys. The Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is announcing their romantic Italian-themed Valentine's weekend special event titled That's Amore, and it will
good,
take place
I was worried the Godfather was coming back in here.
It'll take place on February 11th. Tickets are on sale now, and the program features lots of music from Frank Sinatra and other great standards, as well as a pre-concert dinner at the Symphony Gourmet with the tickets and chocolate and all types of great stuff. But you got to get your tickets now at IndianapolisSymphony.org. Also, something worth checking out at the Symphony is that they are performing a world premiere of the stage production of Hello Dolly, and it's going to be starring Sandy Patty, and it is also though going to be featuring Gary Beach, who was in, you may know him from the Symphony's Holiday,
A Yuletide Celebration.
Exactly, Sharon, thank you.
It seems so long ago now.
Which was a great show, and he was terrific in that, and he comes back in Hello Dolly.
Fun.
And that's coming up January 13th and 15th.
I'm trying to picture Sandy Patty in that scene where she sings something about cash register won't keep you warm at night. What a trip.
It should be fun.
All right. Hey, something else you might want to do with your sweetheart, depending on if you're feeling a little sassy. Naughty Body Senior Stories, told by Rosalind Bresnick Perry. This is a Storytelling Arts of Indiana event coming up next Saturday. That's January 14th, 7:30 to 9:30 at the Glick Indiana History Center. Get more information at storytellingarts.org. And I wouldn't take anybody too young.
No.
Naughty Body Senior Stories.
So we'll be back next week with more ideas of things to do this new year on the calendar we call.
What do we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Yes, it's just another month, but January is legendary for making resolutions. Lose weight, get fit, take a vacation, and how about write that novel that you've always had in you? If that last idea resonated with you, listen up as Sharon Gamble gets Writers Center of Indiana's Barb Shoup to tell her more about a New Year's resolution workshop that's just around the corner. P.S. It's not about writing resolutions. It's about kickstarting your creative project.
There's kind of a cultural stereotype of writers as people who lock themselves away in the garage, the attic, the spare bedroom, the garage, wherever it is they do their thing, and don't need anybody else. That's not necessarily true, though, right?
Well, I don't think it's true. Writing is a lonely thing to do, or maybe I don't even mean lonely so much as it is something that we do alone. I actually love to be in the garret or wherever all by myself in my own world.
And solitary and lonely are not the same thing.
Solitary and lonely are not the same thing at all. It is very much of a solitary pursuit, which is part of what I love about it. But I also love to talk about writing. And I also know that there's only so much that you can learn on your own in that solitary place, wherever it might be for you, and that eventually you're going to come to a place where you need somebody's help. I myself, although I've published numerous novels, I have people who read for me, people that I talk to about my work, and I need to talk to them about my work, because you can't always tell the difference between what's on the page and what's in your head. So
might have accidentally filled in something that doesn't make it across the page.
That's right. And so we need each other to help each other see what we're doing in the most literal way, and also for moral support. It's writing is wonderful, but it's difficult in a lot of different ways, from the act of writing and getting it right to the world in which the writing goes, if you're lucky enough to get it to go somewhere. The whole publishing world is very difficult and tricky to navigate. And so I think having a writing community serves a lot of different purposes, from, everything from offering a place to learn what you need to know to just being with other people of like minds, and also finding out publishing information. We have classes in all those kinds of things. And it was funny, I love to tell this story, but I was on the Art of the Matter a while ago, and not too long afterwards, you guys had a commercial on NPR. And a voice came on the commercial, and it said, "Nobody knows what it's like to be a writer but another writer." And I thought, that is absolutely true. And then I thought, that's me. So I'll say it again. Nobody knows what it's like to be a writer but another writer. And I thought that was very funny. But it's absolutely true. We do need one another.
Now, there are a lot of people making resolutions, or maybe have already broken them as they hear this conversation in early January. I know you have an event coming up, but tell us what inspired this event and what you would say to somebody who has had a novel locked inside, or a book of poems locked inside him or her for years, and who has vowed, 2012, that's the year I'm finally going to do something about it.
Well, the event is called New Year's Resolution Write, and it is for people who want to begin to write, or maybe who have begun to write but have trouble keeping on writing, which we all do, and mm-hmm. which is one of the reasons we need that community of writers. The class is geared to get people together, create some camaraderie around the idea of making this resolution and keeping it, and also to provide strategies. I most recently read this wonderful book about creativity by Twyla Tharp, the choreographer, mm-hmm. And I forget what the title is, but it's basically what she's saying is that creativity is a habit. You know, we tend to think of creativity as being all about inspiration, mm-hmm. and if
the
we don't
muse
have
coming
that, the
and
muse,
sitting on your
and
shoulder.
I don't
yeah.
have a muse. I am my muse. I finally figured out. But what she said that I thought was absolutely fascinating was that a lot of it is habit. And that means finding a place where you can do your art, writing in our case, making a place in your day. And it can be 10 minutes. It can be 2 hours. It can be in the morning. It could be in the evening. It doesn't matter when it is. But I know this to be true for my own work, that when I write regularly, I wouldn't say writing is easy, but it's easier than it is when I don't, mm-hmm. Because it's on your mind. It's right there for you. You go back to it, in a novel, which is what I do. It's a whole world. And so you go back to that world, and it's a lot easier to enter it if you were there yesterday than if you haven't been there for 6 months.
It's less daunting.
It's less daunting, and you don't have to face all those questions every single time. So, what you need is a plan that will help you make writing a habit, and also to make other habits in your lifetime that enable the writing habit. Well, what I mean by that is, if you have a very erratic life and you never know what you're going to do, or you just don't really have any kind of plan for your days, then it's harder to find a place to put your writing. Whereas if you get up every single morning, and maybe first you meditate, maybe you have some other tasks that you do, but if there are things in your life that don't change, and it's funny, isn't it? Because we always think of creativity as being something that shouldn't be like that, you know, that there would be lots of changes and lots of excitement.
That you can't put a framework around it.
Yeah, but you have to. And if creativity is paradoxical. You know, as fast as you say one thing about it, you say the other too. But one thing I've found in my own life is that the more structure I have in my life, all kinds of structure, not just structure as a writer, the better energy I have for writing. And so that the book that I read, the Twyla Tharp book, was very helpful in focusing that for me in a way I hadn't. I think I knew it, but you know how sometimes you know something, but you don't know it until you actually read it or somebody else says it to you. And so that's part of what I think we'll talk about. You know, in addition to looking at the writing part of the picture, what about your whole life picture and how you can maybe get rid of some of the clutter that gets in the way of writing and the clutter is in your head too. You know,
it includes the bad self-talk.
I don't have anything to say, or everybody said everything about that subject already. And I don't deserve it. Right. And who am I to think I have anything to say at all? I call that in my own life bad Barb. And she's not as pleasant as she used to
be, but she does rear up now and then.
Do
you have a little voodoo doll that you stick
pins in my bad Barb doll? Yeah, but it's hard. And you know, other people, like I said, don't necessarily really understand the drive to do that kind of work. And by that work, I mean everything from, you know, writing poetry and fiction to writing for magazines, writing about your own life just for your family, if that's mm-hmm. what you want to do. It's all hard. But it's also worthwhile. There's nothing more satisfying than writing, to me anyway.
Did it take you a while to kind of fine-tune your ritual for how to get the rhythm of time in your life for writing? Did you experiment a little bit before you settled on something?
Another book that I loved was Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers, and he talked about this thing, what he called, I think, the 10,000 hours. And the book is about people who are successful at what they do. And he was saying that the more people he talked to, the more he found that people, when they described kind of like their apprenticeship, it would be like 10,000 hours of being absolutely driven and sort of maniacal and not very easy to get along with, you know, before you sort of mastered your craft, if you ever master it. But you got to the point where you felt like you were that thing, you know, you were a writer. And that took me a very, very long time because I had no training as a writer. I came, you know, out of some other world and always had wanted to do it.
What led you into writing?
I always wanted to be a writer. I was just too chicken to try it, you know, until I was almost 30. I wrote a lot when I was a kid, and then I stopped writing because I got afraid of it, and I was afraid of failing at it. So, you know, you can't really fail if you don't do it, right? And so that was kind of, I think, where I was coming from.
That's pretty wise,
but not really. But I, you know, I knew that it was something I really needed to do and had wanted to do all my life. And if I didn't do it, I was going to feel failed. And I didn't want to do that. So I, you know, I started doing it. But yeah, I mean, it's been different for me at different times of my life. When I was in my 10,000 hours phase, I was writing all the time and very, you know, I mean, it was not easy for people who were around me particularly because that was really what I was doing. And then later...
Get out of my way, I have
to
write.
Exactly. Get out of... You want to talk to my daughters about that or maybe not. Because that, you know, it was very difficult. But I kept going and I was teaching at the time, and teaching for me is always intertwined with writing and also very helpful. But, you know, kind of where I am now is since I've taken the job on at the Writers Center, I have a different kind of schedule. So now I have to get up and write in the morning. And so I get up, usually my dog wakes me up usually before 5. Yep. And I work for 2 or 3 or sometimes 4 hours before my day starts. That works for me. At other times in my life, I've rented an office and worked there in the afternoon. And, you know, that was a very fortunate thing to be able to do. But, you know, you don't have to do that. You just have to seize the time and make it your own and keep on doing it. And I tell myself I'm a better person if I do it. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. As an excuse for, you know, allowing myself, I guess. Not so much anymore. I used to be more that way. But I do know that if I don't write, my balance is out of whack in my life. And I think that's true for a lot of people who are writers or artists of any kind. And you know, for those people who want to get started writing, that maybe is the best place to start thinking about it, as opposed to the actual writing itself. You know, how are you going to find a place and a time for it? You can turn off your television and you can get, you know, usually a couple of hours an evening.
You can turn off your cell phone.
You can turn off your cell phone. You can not visit Facebook so much or email. I mean, there are lots of things that you can do to gather up some time that you can use to write. So I think that the event that we're having, which is coming up on Saturday, January
14th.
14th, thank you very much, will be about helping people kind of get themselves focused to start writing, and maybe we'll have a follow-up later on and just see how well we did. Other classes we have that are coming along during this winter spring term, we've got a lot of classes just on the basics. We've got a class called Show Don't Tell, which is all about how to, you know, not to make your story come alive with details and scenes rather than sort of telling it and telling people what you want them to know, but making them come to their own conclusions. We've got a class called Finding Your Stuff. Knowing what your material is crucial to being able to find things to write about and have the kinds of ideas that you're going to really want to stick with. We've got a class, something new that's called Three Approaches to Process, which I think is going to be cool. We've got classes in fiction from flash fiction to the novel. We've got genre classes in speculative fiction, which people have been asking for a while, historical fiction. I'm going to do a class on the young adult novel. We've got a mystery class taught by Tony Perona, who's a wonderful mystery writer. All of our classes are taught by published authors. We get unbelievably fabulous reviews on them. They're really good. Very practical, hands-on, but also inspiring, which is a good combo. We've got nonfiction. We've got poetry, including a master class by award-winning prose poet David Shumate. We've got classes on publishing, and we have a class on reading like a writer, which I love, because the best way to learn how to be a writer really is to be a good reader. And this class will help people be able to look at a story or a novel and figure out how it works on the page, which is fun. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the kinds of things that we have coming up.
Sharon Gamble with the Writers Center of Indiana's Barb Shoup. New Year's resolution, write, takes place Saturday, January 14th from noon to 4:30. Learn more and sign up at indianawriters.org. Again, indianawriters.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I'll bring curator Mark Rushman back to the show to talk about his new role with galleries at the University of Indianapolis.
I'll find out about a new glass-blowing exhibit at Garfield Park.
And I'll chat with Mark Kiesling about the new Da Vinci project that he's a part of. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here at WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.